Did you catch any of that?
Something about friendship?
We really need a protocol droid.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Eric.
And this is House Podcastica, the Book of Boba Fett edition.
And this week we're covering the Book of Boba Fett Season 1, Episode 1, titled Chapter 1, Stranger in a Strange Land.
Chapter 1, Part 1.
Chapter 1,
Segment Part 1.
Woohoo, Boba Fett!
Yeah, I'm excited. We have a great team here. Three geeky Star Wars fans who all remember when Star Wars first came out. Right?
Yep.
Just about.
So I'm really glad that both you guys wanted to do this. I sort of felt like Mandalorian's so good, and I think this is pretty much just the whole team, the Mandalorian team, Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, all the writers and production people decided, instead of doing a season 3 of Mandalorian, let's do a Boba Fett series and push Mandalorian off. Who knows when? It could be up to a year later. And I was like, dude, do you really want to do that when Mandalorian is so popular? But now that I've seen the first episode and I've just started thinking about how big of a character Boba Fett was, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty momentous. We're getting a Boba Fett series. I'm into it now. Well, how are you guys feeling about it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a huge deal. I think it's going to be really fun to podcast about it and watch it, but you know, it's a little bit different for them probably too when you think about it, because the Mandalorian was all like new. They could do whatever they want in a way, as long as they kind of kept it in the Star Wars universe. But with Boba Fett, he's an existing character, and they have to, I think, treat that a little bit differently. And, you know, over the years, he's popped up in various places, but this is the first time he's really got his own thing. So I think it's a pretty big deal, and hopefully it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that, you know, he's such an iconic character. You know, he only had a few, you know, minutes of screen time way back in the day, and people just immediately attached onto him, and it was just super cool. But yeah, I agree with that he's a known character, so they're going to have to, you know, respect that. But at the same time, we're finally getting to see more of him, and I think it's what fans have wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I have.
I mean, I would guess that Jon Favreau probably wanted to do a Boba Fett series, and maybe he or Disney or whoever decided, well, this is new territory for us. Why don't you do a Mandalorian series and test the waters? And then Jon Favreau knocked it out of the park, home run. And they're like, okay, let's do the Boba Fett series.
Right. You know? Okay, I guess you could do it.
Yeah, you could do it. That's fine. Here, have these five other series as well.
Seems like you know what you're doing, so.
Right.
Why not?
Go ahead. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, the Mandalorian, it capitalizes on that cool costume, which is like 50% of why Boba Fett is cool, maybe 75%, maybe higher. So I don't think Mandalorian definitely never would have happened without Boba Fett.
Yeah, it's at least, you know, 50-75% costume, and then the rest 25% intrigue and mystery,
because yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
Little scene, right?
Right.
But this whole episode felt like an extension. It felt like, you know, Mandalorian season, you know, 3.5
spaghetti western kind of vibe.
For sure.
It, one way it may be different is the Mandalorian is like, it's like the A-Team or something, you know, they travel around. Who's a good, just, you know, characters that travel, but it looks like this might be all on Tatooine. Who knows? Maybe not.
Yeah.
But it'll be different in that way. But anyways, I just wanted to say, so like I said, it's a big thing to finally get a Boba Fett series, iconic Star Wars character. So before we get into the first episode of the series, we're going to do a quick rundown of Boba Fett's history in the real world and the characters in story history in Star Wars. So how we first experienced Boba Fett, I remember still, I was just a little kid You know, I was born in 1971. So when Star Wars came out in 77, I was 6 years old. And then in 78 came the Star Wars Holiday Special, which I think only aired once, and I saw it. And it sucked. And this was still 2 years before Empire Strikes Back came out, where it was, you know, Boba Fett's movie premiere. But Boba Fett's segment, it was a variety show, this special with different segments. There was like B. Arthur singing some Star Wars song and Harvey Korman doing goofy comedy skits. And I saw it again recently just to check and see. And I'm like, yeah, it was bad. But the Boba Fett cartoon that was in it, this was Boba Fett's first on screen appearance, was kick ass. And who knows, maybe it seemed more kick ass just because of how bad the rest of it was. But I remember loving it. And I'm like, oh, this is a cool, scary kind of a character. And then Kenner had their line of Star Wars action figures that we all had, right?
Yep.
I mean,
still have some. Yeah.
Yep.
And they were, yeah, man, that was like the first real big, like, toy merchandising thing from a movie. Yep. And the year before Empire Strikes Back premiered, so in 1979, they did this thing where you could send away for a Boba Fett action figure. And I think I did that, but I wish I still had it. I don't have it.
Yeah. Anymore. I think I tried. I had them all, and I remember that you had to collect the, you know, the little seals off the card and send it in. And I think I forgot about it and just moved on. But I remember going, oh my gosh, I could get a Boba Fett.
Right. Yeah. He just, we didn't know anything about him, and he just still seemed super cool. And, in the movies, he premiered in Empire Strikes Back, fell into the Sarlacc pit in Return of the Jedi. He only has four lines in those two movies, and here they are.
As you wish. He's no good to me dead. What if he doesn't survive? Put Captain Solo in the cargo hold.
That's it. And of course, that's Temuera Morrison in the special editions. They put his voice in. It wasn't him originally, but still, total screen time 6 minutes and 32 seconds. So yeah, I think you mentioned it earlier, Eric, that he was popular, or maybe it was Chris, that because he was a mystery, and it was the design, but it was also the intrigue of this character who, you know, he left you wanting more.
Yeah.
Surprised he even had 6 minutes of screen time, though. I mean, a lot of that was probably just standing around, but even that feels like a lot.
Yeah. It's like lined up in the corner with a bunch of other
exactly. Yeah.
And then, I mean, it's interesting to me that it is about sort of the scarcity that makes him interesting at first, but eventually his father, Jango Fett, you find out, was the template for the whole clone army.
Yep.
And so also the inspiration of the uniform design of the clone army, you know, their uniforms with that T-shaped visor, who then evolved into the stormtrooper. So they kind of retconned it back so that Boba Fett became connected to just like hundreds of thousands of other characters.
Right. hoping his coolness would rub off.
Yeah, right. And I mean, I like the Clone Wars outfits. They look cool, the clone troopers. So anyway, quick behind the scenes development, and I got a lot of some of this I didn't know. I got it from this great 20-minute feature on Disney Plus called Under the Helmet, The Legend of Boba Fett, which I recommend people watch if you haven't seen it. But his design was originally supposed to be an upgraded stormtrooper, like a super trooper. That they only made one costume back then, and it was all white, like a stormtrooper, designed by famed Star Wars designer Ralph McQuarrie and art director Joe Johnston. They wanted a cool look with the jet pack, flamethrower, darts, and everything. The T-visor was like medieval in its design, which evoked sword and sorcery. And they planned to build 100 of the suits or so for an army of super troopers, but then they had budget problems. They didn't have enough money to make all that, so they decided to make him a bounty hunter instead. So they painted him up with silver and red and green and distressed to look really battle-worn and scorched. And that special showed he was actually in this Marin County parade with Darth Vader walking around in his actual screen costume before anyone had seen him in anything, not even the holiday special. And he was getting kids asking for his autograph and getting this huge response and everything. And yeah, Jeremy Bullock played him in the suit in Empire and Jedi. And he really, another thing about Boba Fett that was done so well is his movements. He's just, he just exudes coolness in his movements. And I think that's a big part of what makes Mandalorian work too. Minimal movement, you know?
He has a walk for sure.
Yeah. And a way of standing and everything. And then Daniel Logan played young Boba Fett in Attack of the Clones and the Clone Wars cartoon. And Temuera Morrison played Boba Fett's father, Jango Fett, in Attack of the Clones, and now plays Boba Fett on The Mandalorian and in Book of Boba Fett, which makes sense since he's a clone and he needs to look just like that. So that's just a quick rundown and kind of the behind-the-scenes development and the history of how we first experienced Boba Fett. But I asked Eric to kind of give us some of the key points in Boba Fett's in-story history leading up to his appearances in The Mandalorian and what happened just before we see him here in the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, so you mentioned Jango Fett and that he was the template for the clones, and part of his payment, or his payment, was to get an unmodified clone that he could raise as his son. So, you know, that's kind of his origin, and that
because the other clones were bred to be like docile,
right. They had all kinds of other modifications that we find out from like Clone Wars and Bad Batch and whatnot. But he was unmodified, and he raised him as his son. His mentor was Jaster Mareel. And that's where his armor came from, and it has been passed down.
He was a Mandalorian, too?
Yeah, he was also a Mandalorian. And then we go to when he's young in Attack of the Clones, and he faces off against Jango Fett, and faces off against Mace Windu, and gets decapitated. And little Boba Fett finds his helmet with or without his head in it. But he finds his helmet and he gets his armor, and he goes on a bunch of adventures. Most of them are in the comic books, where he got some training from other bounty hunters. He had also got training from Jango Fett, of course. Then after that, he shows up in, you know, Empire Strikes Back, where he, you know, is hired by Vader. And I did find one interesting thing. Again, from the comic books, that Vader had hired him previously to find the pilot that destroyed the Death Star. And he tries to hunt down Luke and fails, but he gets his name and gives it to Vader, which I thought was kind of cool. Mm. But, you know, we see him on the Star Destroyer, you know, being hired to find Han Solo to give, you know, to use as bait for Luke. And then we all know how that happens in Empire, where he captures him and ends up delivering him to Jabba, where he hangs out at the palace for a while. And then we see the battle at the Sarlacc pit, where he loses control of his jetpack and does the horrible scream into the side of the ship and tumbles down. And then hopefully we'll find out what happens in the first episode.
Yeah, we will. So we then meet him. So yeah, the first episode goes back to that, but we met him in The Mandalorian.
Oh, right. Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot all that. Yeah. He shows up in The Mandalorian after we see him out in the desert, and he looks like he's been out there for a while. We see the gaffy stick bod on his back. Yep. Got the dad bod going on. And
yeah, he has a sand or Tusken Raider. Does he have an outfit too, like them, kind of, or just kind of a desert outfit? But he has a weapon, like, of theirs. Yeah.
Right. He has the weapon slung across his back, mm-hmm, for sure. And we get to see him use that on some stormtroopers. He
ends clobbers them with it.
Like, yeah, smashes them with it. Yeah. But he overs, or he watched the battle between Mandalorian and
Fennec Shand.
Yeah, Fennec, what the heck? Yeah, and, you know, they leave her for dead, and he, of course, helps her and gets her.
Yeah, so, yeah, like, the Mandalorian needed money, took a job to get Fennec Shand, who was this mercenary that had worked for people in the Empire who had gone to jail, and now she's an enemy of the Republic. And this goofy rookie bounty hunter shot her and left her for dead, right? And then we saw some mysterious figure come and take her, and we had to speculate on who it was, and people were like, I think it's Boba Fett, and I was like, come on.
It was based on the boots, I remember, right? We saw the boots, I think, based and we're like, those are Boba Fett boots.
They're Boba Fett's boots. So, yeah, so then he you know, he recruits Fennec, and then they go to, you know, find his armor, and they meet up with the Mandalorian, and they make a deal where they will help him get, you know, the child back, and he will get his armor. He'd been
kidnapped by the Imperials or something.
The Empire, yeah. So that's how they made that deal, and they all work together. But then after that, they in the credits after the last episode of Mandalorian, he heads off to Tatooine and shows up at Jabba's palace and finds Bib Fortuna, on the throne, and he wastes no time cleaning house, takes his seat.
That's right, yeah. Because Bib Fortuna had tried to take over after Princess Leia killed Jabba, but didn't last long. There's one little part in there, though. Boba Fett, I guess we saw in this episode that we're going to talk about that Jawas took his armor.
Oh, right,
and,
right.
And somehow this guy Cobb Vanth, this like sheriff played by Timothy Oliphant, he said he bought the armor. He said, I think in the novel, it's a little more complicated, the novel Aftermath. But anyway, he said he bought the armor. And so that's why the Mandalorian was going around looking for other Mandalorians to help him. And somebody said, there's one on Tatooine. So he goes there, but it's not really a Mandalorian. It's Cobb Vanth wearing Boba Fett's armor. So that's how that happened. So, yeah.
There you go.
There you go. There's like 1,000 other comics and books with other stories. But that's like
I read a bunch of them, and there were quite a few different adventures that he went on in between all the stuff that we get to see on film. So if you want to know more, just do a little bit of research and you'll find it.
Yeah.
All of that, though, was, if I'm not mistaken, decanonized when Disney took over Lucasfilm, though, correct? All of that previous backstory?
Depends on when it came out. So I don't know how much Boba Fett material has come out since then, because I don't really keep up with all the alternate stuff, but right around when The Force Awakens came out, they said, okay, everything else, it doesn't count anymore, it's Legends.
But then they pick and choose, though.
But then they pick and choose, and they're like, oh yeah, like Thrawn, you know.
Yeah,
but it's a different version. So so there may have been some Boba Fett stuff since then, I'm not sure, because that's, you know, when did Force Awakens come out, like 2015 or something?
Oh my goodness,
it's been a while. It's 2014.
That sounds right.
Okay, that's awesome. Now let's get into the Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 1, Chapter 1, Segment 1, A Stranger in a Strange Land. First, before we get into our points, let's just go around and say, in general, how we liked it, whether we liked it. Chris, what about you?
In general, I really, really liked it. It was really fun to watch. I think Tamura Morrison is great.
He is great.
Ming-Na Wen is great as well as Fennec. And I feel like they didn't really try to do too much in this first episode, but I really liked what they did. And I enjoyed the two, like telling the story through two time frames the way they did. And I just think it all worked pretty well as the first episode for this show, and sort of an introduction to what they want to do here. And I sort of have a feeling for that after this one. I do have a ton of questions, but I really liked watching it. And I think some of those will be answered as the season goes on, or even as we chat through things here. I think really great start, I thought.
I mean, I think not trying to do too much is one of the strengths of The Mandalorian. Where, because it was, I looked, 9 minutes and 20 seconds until there was any dialogue in this episode, which is like a quarter of the way through.
Yeah.
And I just love how it's a show, they're shows of moments, you know, they really are in tune with the feel of something, which mm-hmm. I feel like I wish The Walking Dead, well, it's doing better now, but when The Walking Dead does that well, it's better. I feel like when they're not just explaining things or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, they sort of like, you know, they know that they can show us things about this character. Like we said earlier, like we kind of know him already, right? I think they're going to do some new things with him here and obviously get into way more detail, but they can show us stuff about this character. They don't have to really like hit us over the head and tell us everything like right off the bat about Boba Fett. It's Boba Fett. We have a feel for him already. Right. So, that's how they
started.
Let's
see him in action now. That's kind of what it's like.
I think so. Yeah.
What about you, Eric?
That, yeah, absolutely. You know, seeing him, you know, it makes me think of the Marvel movies of seeing, you know, the comic book heroes that I had read about finally in action. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with Fett, you know, he using his flamethrower, you know, using all of his weapons and just being the badass bounty hunter that he is just awesome. And like I said earlier, I felt like the show was just an extension of Mandalorian, which I loved. So the whole feel of it, I thought was great. You know, I wanted it to be more, but I understand that, you know, that less is more sometimes. And that's kind of how it felt.
Yeah. It leaves you wanting more.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, I really liked it a lot too. The feel of it is my, and the visual, the experience of it, the vibe, the music, thrumming music and harsh desert. And I thought it was, in a sadistic kind of way, fun, just how Boba Fett really just got the crap beat out of him. He got devoured, burned, bashed in the head, sandblasted, tied and dragged, beaten.
But he still had his moments, though, and that was cool.
He's
right?
Tough. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is he needs to claw back from this low place that he started out in. And so,
right.
And he's a tough mofo and he's doing it. So, I mean, I just thought it was really, really great. I am a little concerned about a couple things. One, that if it is in the same location, will they be able to differentiate it enough? Like they've done so well with on The Mandalorian. I'm not too worried about that though. But the other thing, well, I guess I'll get into that in one of my points. So Chris, would you like to go first?
Sure. I just want to say, too, the music wasn't really one of my points, but you mentioned it. And I think the music and the soundtrack and the sound design on the show is really, really awesome. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of The Mandalorian, but it's not the same.
Yeah.
It has its own fresh style to it. Mm-hmm.
It also feels very derivative in a good way of those old spaghetti westerns, but it's its own thing.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Yeah, it's its own thing. So I watched it three times and every time I like the sort of the sound design and the music even more. So
yeah, I like how it's like, it's kind of aggressive. It's like, dung, 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 ha! You know?
Getcha. Anyways, my first item here is that I sort of hinted on it in my general thoughts, but this to me, in a weird sort of way, felt like an origin story for Boba Fett, mm-hmm. which I really didn't expect coming out of this show. It never really occurred to me that we would need a Boba Fett origin story, despite him being so mysterious and us not really knowing all that much about him. But this episode gave us some basic information about the character, I think, and some answers that we've had for a long time, some answers to some questions we've had for a long time. But also making him feel kind of new and a little bit fresh. And at least I felt anyway, it's like there's still a lot to learn about him and we're going to get a lot of interesting stuff for him. So, you know, we see him at his kind of at his lowest point, right, where he's stuck in the Sarlacc. He gets out and then we see what he has to go through after that. Right. And that felt like him being reborn in a way. And that's why maybe it felt like an origin story to me a little bit.
It's like a big turning point in his life, possibly.
Huge turning point, but we're going back to the beginning, or this really obvious beginning point for the story of this character.
We thought it was the end for 40 years.
You think it's the end, but it's totally not. And then, you know, the way they explain him getting out of the Sarlacc was different than I had thought my whole life. And
that jetpack.
Well, everybody thought jetpack. Yeah. It's like, well, he has a jetpack. He just flies out. Everything's fine. But totally didn't play out that way. And I really like that. And then, you know, in the sort of present time, he's sitting on the throne. He's becoming Lord Fett, as they're all calling him, you know. And but he kind of has to learn how to do this, right? He says he's going to learn or not rule with an iron fist, but rule with respect. And just all the things he's got to figure out and what he's going to do and how he's going to, you know, manage himself and the people around him and stuff like that. And it was just the beginning bits of that little bit. So part of me kind of thinks that the whole season is going to be in some ways an origin story for this character of Boba Fett. And if they do more after this, it will really be sort of, that's when it would kick into, you know, what he does and how he acts as a character sort of in his new life in a way. But I really liked that aspect to it, and it kind of tore him down back to the beginning, and we're just going to start in a way fresh with Boba Fett the character and see how he handles himself in this situation. So I didn't expect that, and it really worked for me.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much more to add to that.
I don't know.
Yeah, that was very,
I mean,
that was,
I guess,
good.
You know, the thing that I worry about a little bit is, are they going to, and I think they are, going to Disney-fy him quite a lot.
I was going to say the same thing.
You know?
I was,
and he's already that way, though. I was like, are they going to try to make him just a full-on hero? But he was in Mandalorian. He's a hero now. I'm just going to have to accept that.
I think you might. I mean, he's kind of a hero, like, you know, good guy, bad guy. It can be a matter of perspective, but also, mm-hmm. Like he sits there in when he's holding court and the people are coming to pay tribute to him. Right. And he says something about, you know, what's going on here? I'm supposed to be the crime lord. Right. So he's still a crime lord.
Yeah.
So, you know,
but
he
I'm
might
like,
not-
does that make sense that he would like, it's a weird storyline for a show where it feels like they're trying to make us kind of look up to him. And it's like, yeah, you want to rule with respect instead of fear, but you are a crime lord that commits crimes, which means you're taking things from people that doesn't belong to you, you know? Yeah. So does that really fit?
You're shaking down all these, you know, people, but at the same time doing it respectfully.
I mean, you know, you know how I think, how I make this work is the Tatooine is this backwater planet on the outer rim of the galaxy where farthest away from the center where all the law is. It's lawless, like the Old West.
Yeah.
And so I think the Hutts, who are really the crime, the mob, they run things. And they, if there's any sense of order in this part of the galaxy, the Hutts provide it. And so I think as long as you stay on the Hutts' good side, the idea is that actually things can be good for you and they're actually providing a service. Something like that.
I mean,
that makes sense.
If you're indebted to the mob, you're still working with the mob. But
yeah. And this girl, this woman, Garza, who runs this club, played by Jennifer Beale, who's freaking gorgeous, by the way, she seemed to not mind at all giving him his money. And I think, I guess the idea could be, okay, if I pay for him, I will be protected. I will, like, the officials around here will let me do things the way I want to do them, and it'll be worth my while.
Well, she knows how things work. I mean, it was very clear. Yeah. You know, she just had this one scene. I'm very curious about how she factors into the rest of the show, because I don't feel like they would just have that character for this, just this one scene, right?
She may not be fully straightforward, like you can't believe what you see, potentially.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. I don't know, but she knows how things work here, obviously. Like, it was very clear, here's a helmet full of money, and let's just keep things going. Yeah, exactly.
So I think with the, you know, with this being a planet that is on the outer rim, that is lawless, that there are all kinds of things going on, and these businesses and whatnot would actually need protection.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of touch on it with the beginning, but with that gang of people that were harassing the moisture farmer.
Right.
You know, so he actually has a job to do, and he can do it.
Yeah. And that's the same gang, by the way, that was harassing Cobb Vanth in The Mandalorian.
Yeah. Oh, right.
So they're they need to be dealt with one way or another.
But I think that that's just common there.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the amount of lawlessness you're talking about, there's clearly a lot. And
right.
And, you know, maybe it'll be a Robin Hood scenario where Boba Fett is,
yeah,
Rob, you know, doing bad things, but with the right good intentions, kind of, you know?
Right.
And
that was one of my worries, that they would make him too much of a good guy. But then when he blew the guy to pieces with his rocket launcher, mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay, there you go. To him. You know, he definitely shot first.
I think you could say they're mercenaries, Fennec Shand and Boba Fett and the Mandalorian. I think a crime lord is different than a mercenary. But I think in this part of the galaxy, maybe if you didn't have the crime lords, it would just be anarchy and everybody would suffer. So that's the way I rationalize how this is okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and he refers to her as a master assassin, right? So she's an assassin, too. I mean, these are not...
Who will kill anyone you pay her to kill.
Right.
And she wants him to kill everybody, too, by the way, which is super funny. Okay.
That's true. Yeah, that is true.
Eric, what's your first point?
We've touched on this, and, you know, the show was definitely awesome, and just finding out what happened to him in the Sarlacc pit and how he got out and finally revealing that and, you know, showing him what he had to do and using his flamethrower and crawling out of the sand. It was definitely an amazing, cool moment. Chris, you mentioned the rebirth. I mean, it can't get any more, you know, symbolic with him crawling out of
the
sand.
It's like he's in a womb.
You know, right,
it
exactly.
Really is. I think that might have been an intentional...
Sure. And it seems like this whole journey for him in this episode is being reborn. Mm-hmm. And I can totally see how you see this as an origin story, because we haven't gotten much. I mean, we've gotten little tidbits here and there as he was a kid, but I don't think he really became Boba Fett until he put that helmet on. You know, I mean, he has story with him as a child, but once he became the bounty hunter with the iconic helmet and armor, that's when.
Maybe we'll see that too, if we keep getting these flashbacks. Sure.
I was wondering that if we're going to continue to see scenes from his past and his younger days and growing up and stuff like that. I don't know, but I think that would be really cool if we did.
Yeah. Yeah. So since you brought up the Sarlacc pit, like, we saw him fall down in there almost 40 years ago in 1983, and now we finally get to see. And I remember I would always wonder, like, what's going down on in there? You know, I don't think he was the only one that fell in, right? There were a couple others.
Yeah, there were a few other
what
people.
What is it like? And now we know it's kind of like you'd expect. It's all, like, intestinal and fleshy and slimy.
Fleshy, yep.
Gross. And covered in goop. And here's 3PO's line. Oh, dear. His high exaltedness, the great job of the Hutt, has decreed that you are to be terminated immediately, to Han Solo. Han says, good, I hate long waits. You will therefore be taken to the Dune Sea and cast into the pit of Carcoon, the nesting place of the all-powerful Sarlacc. Doesn't sound so bad. In his belly, you will find a new definition of pain and suffering as you are slowly digested over 1,000 years.
1,000 years. Yep,
so this is, this years. Slime is probably like digestive acid.
Yeah, but during that whole battle, there was no stormtroopers, so that stormtrooper had to come from somewhere. Yeah. Maybe he was unfortunately walking along looking for a couple of droids. You know,
took a wrong step.
Yeah, we know that the stormtrooper, it's hard to see out of the masks, according to Luke.
Right,
but
right,
also
right,
it
right.
could just be shows that the Hutts aren't always friendly with the Empire.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. Yeah,
I think, when Boba Fett was down there, he had to pull the hose out of the stormtrooper for oxygen, right? So he could breathe. Is that what that was?
Yes.
And I thought, well, okay, they get digested over 1,000 years, but I have a feeling they might suffocate first. It seems like it's pretty hard to breathe down there, is new to me.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I think that was... Maybe the digestive juices somehow keep them alive without oxygen. I don't know.
Oh, my God. it's even more horrible.
The stormtrooper, the tube with the air, I think that's because stormtroopers are meant to be able to operate in space. Is that right?
You know, so I kind of looked into that, and I had never, known that was a thing. And, it's not like they're, there's an oxygen tank on their back or anything like that. But I remember I had a sketchbook that Ralph McQuarrie did, back when I was a kid. And the original design for the Stormtrooper had them with tubes so they could fight in space. I think that was like the original design. So, I'm thinking that's probably where it came from.
I mean, some of them do. The TIE fighter pilots, obviously, they're pilots, right? So they've got tubes and so on. Stormtroopers, I think they're probably just playing a little fast and loose with the rules because those helmets come on and off pretty easy.
Right.
And there's no tubes attached.
Balsa wood.
Whatever. Yeah. Yep. So anyways, I think it's all right.
It's fine.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting that could have been a clone.
Right.
And that he was like his brother was helping him, in a weird way.
His dead brother.
Oh, right.
His dead brother.
All right.
Digested.
So I want to talk about, we kind of touched it a little bit, but what exactly is he doing and how? And I think this episode, and who knows, maybe the whole series, which is a 7-episode series, by the way, if people didn't know, is about respect. And he earned the Sand People's respect. And later he is trying to earn the people of Mos Espa's respect as a crime lord, the leaders and the mayor and everything. And he, with the Sand People, they take slaves and they don't treat them well. And we saw that in Attack of the Clones when they took Anakin's mother, Shmi, and they were treating her really badly. And she died because of it. And he killed a bunch of them. And they do that with him. They bind him and beat him and refuse him to give him hardly any water, which I'm like, dude, you're on a desert planet. Got to give him something. But then he killed that monster, which I'm sure we'll talk about. And that's how he at least earned a drink of water. But I think, we saw him in The Mandalorian with his gaffy stick. And it made me think, okay, maybe he's either can be considered one of them. We don't even know if they're human. I doubt we'll ever see what's under their masks. I kind of like it that way, but at least you get the idea that he's friends with them, that they're okay with him. So I don't know if he's at that level yet with them in the story here, but seems like that's where it's maybe headed, that he's earned their respect. And, this whole sequence that we saw, the flashback took place. I mean, he comes out of the Sarlacc pit, so who knows how long he was down there, but I don't think it could have been that long. So it's like right after what happened with Luke and Han and everybody. But when he meets the Mandalorian time frame, I think is about 5 or 6 years after that. So it seems like he's had 5 or 6 years on Tatooine to build whatever relationship he has with the Sand People by then, I think.
I think that fits. I mean, he couldn't have been down there for that long. The Jawas looked like they were just showing up to salvage that thing. I would assume that they're going all over the place looking for that kind of stuff. Yeah. And snatching it up.
And so then with the people of Mos Espa, that's a little more complicated. I loved the scene with the mayor's delegate coming in and the way they could have had him come in and just be like a typical stereotypical, hey, we're not paying you, you're going to pay us. But instead he was very polite with implying a lot, but trying to probably save his own life because he has a really shitty job there.
And, he probably wouldn't know if he was going to be treated like Jabba. And, Fennec even says it, that, this kind of insolence would get you fed to the menagerie.
And then he goes, should I kill him? And Boba Fett, lucky for this guy, said no. He says, Jabba ruled with fear. I intend to rule with respect. And then the guy says, I would not be surprised if you receive another delegation in the near future, which I think means we're going to send our goons after you.
Yeah.
But so that shows that he doesn't want to rule. Well, he says it, but he also shows it that he doesn't want to rule by fear and he doesn't want to put himself above others. And the droid says, you must project strength. And Shan Fennec Shand wants him to be carried aloft like some kind of Egyptian prince or something, but he yeah. wants to walk on his own 2 feet. And the droids putting his armor on for him was a cool scene. Kind of reminded me of yeah. like in Game of Thrones when the like Cersei would have people putting her clothes on her, but I guess that doesn't really count as being above everyone else because they're just droids and it's in private and no one can see. I don't know.
It reminded me of Tony Stark getting the Iron Man suit put on.
Yeah, by it's more exactly. like that technically, yeah. given their machines.
It was that was another one of my favorite moments cool. is seeing those droids put all of his armor it's on like Rambo. And seeing, you know, exactly. you know, it was like the
it was a suiting up montage. Knife, you know, a suiting up montage.
Absolutely.
I love a good montage.
Absolutely.
So the whole thing about whether it's worthwhile to try to be a crime lord. I mean, we just talked about it, you know. I mean, it doesn't seem to go well together necessarily that you want to not rule by fear at this job of committing crimes and taking things from people, but maybe they just need that structure in this part of the galaxy. But someone online, I can't take credit for this, said, you know, that whole scene where he loses his helmet and he's attacked by those guys with the red energy shields mm-hmm. and it's rolling away and all the Jawas, by the way, converge on it. And one says, Utini, of course, but that maybe that's supposed to evoke his father's head or helmet rolling off after Mace Windu killed him and sort of foreshadow if you continue this road as a crime lord who seeks profit that you'll be doomed. And so maybe, you know, over the course of the series, he'll decide not to go that route. But who knows? It's just speculation.
I think you've hit on something here, though, Jason, about the show maybe being about respect in a way. You know, a lot of all your examples are good ones. And then at the end of that fight, when Fennec runs off chasing after the one guy or the two guys who get away, you know, Boba Fett tells her, bring him back alive. Now, that arguably could just be, I need to interrogate this guy and find out who he is and who he's working for or whatever, and I intend to kill him anyways. But it could also be, sure, they attacked us, but let's not unnecessarily kill anyone, you know, bring them back alive.
Yep.
Something
and
like that.
And she pushes one off.
I do. Which yeah, is I was like, gonna say,
the buildings aren't that tall, but
she's like, but we only need one. Enough.
Yeah. So
she's her. So.
Right. Exactly. Right. She wants to kill everybody. And
that was a compromise. Just right. half.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Chris.
So my second one is more about the Sand People or the Tusken Raiders and their society, because I feel like in this one short episode, I personally, anyways, got more insight into the Sand People than I have from any other Star Wars show or movie. And, you know, they've been in a lot. They've been around a bunch. But I feel like I didn't, or my understanding of them was that they were very basic, like not too intelligent, just kind of attacked people. And that's kind of all they did. Remember, Obi-Wan says that they frighten easily, but they'll be back with greater numbers. They just keep attacking. They just keep coming back. They're not, there's not much to them. And that was kind of my understanding. And now here, all of a sudden, we see them like at home or in a camp somewhere. It seems like they have some sort of order, some hierarchy to the society a little bit. They have the ability to plan things. And they're skilled fighters and stuff like that. They're not just like attacking in groups and whacking people with sticks, although we see some of that in this one too. But
and they seem to have specialization. That one guy was kind of like the fighter guy yep. that the leader nodded to.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah, totally. They just seem like they're way more intelligent creatures than I ever gave them the benefit of the doubt of being. And I really liked that. And I thought all of this was done, you know, in this one quick episode. And I feel like the Sand People, as you mentioned earlier, I think, Jason, about how there's already a relationship, it seems like, between them and Boba Fett, a certain level of respect. Now, it was enhanced by the end of this episode, because when they come back after killing the big six-armed monster, which we might talk about, they're all congratulating this young Tusken for returning with his head. it's not really clear to me whether they're totally just impressed that he brought it back or if he was claiming to have killed it. I don't know. Right. But it seemed like if that's what was happening, the leader of the Tusken Raiders, you know, he offers Boba Fett some water and he seems to at least understand that Boba Fett must have helped in this situation. Right. So it just shows this level of understanding and intelligence. Yeah. And
there's more nuance to the characters and individuation and stuff.
Way more nuance. And they clearly have, at least this leader clearly has some respect for Boba Fett's abilities and stuff like that. So like all of these things, I just really enjoyed seeing. And it was more about the Sand People than I'd ever gotten before. And I kind of do hope they stick around because it's, you know, they don't, they might have to subtitle them if they become important characters. But for now, I think it was just pretty cool to see that, something I haven't seen in Star Wars before now.
I mean, I think we talked about this a little on The Mandalorian, but now that our culture has become more sophisticated and also more sensitive to like indigenous peoples and stuff like that, you know, and not just mainstream culture, but being the marginalized and stuff like that. So I think because of that, The Mandalorian, the show, handled the Sand People differently, where Mando respected them and kind of chastised that bounty hunter guy, I think, for being derogatory towards them, if I remember right. I'm not sure.
I think it was like the whole village though, right? I mean, they all saw them as this savage group of people. Yeah.
But if you pay closer attention, you'll see that there's nuance there and stuff. But I like that, you know, they don't sugarcoat it. They take people as slaves and don't treat them like shit. So, but you know, it's just more nuanced, and so that's cool and interesting. And also, I saw another thing online about how in Mandalorian, when we saw the Sand People, I think they were all wearing exactly the same thing, but here they've decided to go deeper, so they all have their own individual versions of the outfit.
Right. And they looked awesome, I thought. Like some of these, well, the costuming in general is really fantastic on the show, not just Boba Fett, but everybody else. I think they do a great job with that stuff.
Yeah. But
let me ask you guys a question related to the Sand People here specifically. So they tie up Boba Fett and, you know, Jason, you've mentioned they take slaves and stuff like that. So I guess that's what they were doing there. But then the youngling or the kid sand person, why does he take him out on the adventure into the desert? Like, why does he leave with him and the Rodian and go off on their own? I wasn't quite clear on what that particular motivation was here.
I mean, I thought, I wasn't totally either, because they took him to that looked like a moisture farm, and we watched these raiders kill, right? Some moisture farmers.
Yeah, I mean, I know, and we then, had to see that as the audience, because that's going to be important.
I don't know why they would take. And then they started having him dig for these gourds, which have water. So I think that was the point, to have them dig, and maybe they need to dig by a moisture farm. I don't know. That's just kind of reaching, but.
Yeah, I
kind of thought that they were just out there looking for those urchin things, and they happened to see smoke and looked over to see the moisture farm. But I guess it could have gone either way, that he was either showing them, you know, maybe where to dig or something. If that is the case, that they needed to be by a moisture farm, it kind of makes sense.
I don't feel like they were finding enough water for that. Like little tiny gourds of water.
That was the point. Take these guys out to get some water.
Maybe. The only other thing I could think of, and maybe this is just reading way too much into it, is that this was some kind of almost like a trial for this young sand person who he goes out on his own. The way they were celebrating when he comes back with the head of the monster made me feel like, number one, maybe they knew that monster was sleeping there or buried there. And it was almost like a test. He goes out with these two people, and if he comes back alive, he's sort of like proven himself as a mature sand person or something like that. But I don't feel like that was really in the episode. So that could just be me making it up. But I was looking for any reason for why he went out with them.
You could be right. To me, I just, the simplest explanation is he told him to dig. They dug up some water.
And they
you need water. So I don't know.
Well, the real reason was they took him out there so they could fight this monster. Badass creature.
Yeah, fight the creature.
But I kind of agree with you, you know, that they were congratulating them a lot. And obviously we didn't know what they were saying, but he was mimicking what happened and, you know, doing the throat choke thing and all that. And it did seem like they were congratulating him way more than you would if you knew that Mando really did it kind of thing, that it was a test.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Could be. And you know, it could be something too where the writers know, and they know that we won't really know for sure, and that's okay with them, and we'll never find out. Because sometimes it's better to sort of hint at a larger story that they don't actually tell because it's not part of the main story, you know?
Sure. Yeah, and that would be fine. But I was a little, I just had the question, you know, and it could also come back. Like, it could even be explained with like a single line in the next episode for all we know, right?
right.
You know.
But you know, they did show that they value, you know, combat and, you know, the what little we've seen, you know, of them throughout the movies, it's always been them attacking something or shooting at something. You know, most of the time almost for comic relief. But in this episode we got to see that, you know, the right-hand man of the leader being quite the badass and showing off some, you know, major skill. And then the respect didn't come until he, you know, Mando kind of did the same thing where he kind of showed off, how tough he was.
And I actually liked that in that first fight, because Mando runs off.
Boba Fett. Let's not call him Mando. That's too confusing.
Sorry. Boba Fett. That dog-like creature that's called a Massif, a guard dog, kind of woke up and saw that Boba Fett was trying to get away. Like, huh? What are you doing? No, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And then he grabbed it and incapacitated it and used its teeth to undo his...
I think there was another moment in there where he did that and then he petted the dog. I think that was also telling kind of...
how Disney-fied it is.
and that he had to do it, but that he still respected the animal.
Later on, he says no hard feelings.
Yeah, right?
Right, exactly.
Maybe just saying that because he doesn't want to get killed, but yeah.
That too.
I forget if it was that moment, but anyway, at one point he's running away and the guard dog comes after him, the Massif, and then the sand people are all lined up, and I loved how one of them just bopped their stick into the ground and the guard dog was like, oh, and totally went back behind him just like a trained dog. And then the leader nods at this fighter guy and he goes out and kicks Boba Fett's ass, which was, I thought, oh, that's good. Yeah, you don't want it to be too easy for him, you know?
Yeah, but then I like that scene. It shows that, A, like I said before, they're good sort of fighters, warriors, whatever. And then Eric, you mentioned they respect combat, and that's almost what that felt like, right? It's here's an opportunity. Just go and show them what we can do.
Yeah. And while we're talking about the sand people, I love their tents. That very one cool tent just looks so cool. And the nighttime scenes with the tents and the fire in the desert. So reminded me of Burning Man, which is my favorite.
They almost look like pyramids to me. And, you know, it seems like there's this kind of pharaoh, thing going on with him, you know, getting the armor put on him. It was almost like a pharaoh getting his robes and whatnot.
And in Attack of the Clones, we saw they had these domes that didn't look that cool, but tents looked way cooler. And maybe they're better for like migrating or whatever.
Right, moving around. That's another thing that I got. Yeah.
All right, I think it's your turn, Eric.
Okay, so again, I love Tamara. He's a great actor. I've seen quite a handful of his movies, and I know this is something little, but I love his facial expressions when he fights, and it was just cool to see that kind of trademark Mallory just the craziness in his eyes when he is like in the zone fighting, and he just has a presence, you know, and I think that's why it works so well with Boba Fett, that he just has this presence. I can imagine if he walked into a room that people would think he's Boba Fett without even the armor on. And it kind of reminded me of some of his other films. I remember the first movie that I think I ever saw him in was Once Were Warriors, pretty dark film. But he did his trademark crazy faces, and I got to see that more, and it was just really cool.
This was my favorite thing I've ever seen him in this episode. He showed a range for one thing. He had that crazy face, but there were some funny moments with him and Fennec Shand, and just a lot of, you know, non-dialogue scenes where he had to face act, and the scenes with him and the Rodian were hilarious.
I really liked him in this
episode more than I've always liked him, but this episode I was like, oh, he's great.
I should do a Temuera Morrison marathon or something, because I am not sure I've seen him in very much actually over the years. So I got to
most
do that.
Of it has been the Star Wars stuff, right? I mean, most of it has been voice acting stuff here and there. He was in Spartacus for one of the seasons there, a handful of movies, Barbed Wire, I think, unfortunately.
I saw Once Were Warriors way back when it premiered, but I don't remember anything about it.
Yeah.
That was is a dark one. So if anybody wants to watch that one is definitely prepare.
So how do you guys feel about the fact that they're not going to be shy about taking the helmet off this time? Whereas with Mando, we had to wait forever to get the helmet off and get some actual face acting. Now, it seems like it's not going to be a problem. They're just going to be taking the Boba Fett helmet off willy-nilly.
I think it's good. Yeah. It differentiates the two shows. And
plus, we get to see Crazy Face.
I wouldn't have liked, Temuera Morrison nearly as much without that. What about you?
Yeah.
I'm glad it's coming off, too. I think it's a good decision. You need facial expressions, you know, and I don't want to talk about Marvel so much, but things like the Spider-Man mask, you know, they go for every chance they can to get the mask off
those things off
so that we can see the actors' faces. Right. And, with something like Spider-Man, honestly, I don't think it makes as much sense. Spider-Man's supposed to keep his mask on, but with this, it's totally fine. I think it's okay. And I'm happy about it.
You know, but at the same time, you know, the mask is awesome. You know, I think that's what we all fell in love with. And I think it's a good balance, right? I mean, he takes it off and puts it on, and we get to see him kicking ass.
He puts it on when it's time to fight. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Sometimes.
The first fight we got here, it was off, but you know, whatever.
Right. Right. Right.
But I still think it's cool in Mandalorian that they keep it on just for something different. And because Star Wars is known for its masked characters, you know, Darth Vader rarely takes his mask off. But, I think maybe that's one reason why Pedro Pascal, who plays the Mandalorian, is over on HBO now filming Last of Us, because he doesn't even need to be there.
Right.
I mean, didn't he got upset about that? I know that I think there was so, but then conflict, he's like, right?
Fine, I'll do Last of Us. Screw
what
you
a,
guys.
What a great job. He plays this amazing character, and he doesn't even need to show up most of the time.
Just go into a sound booth one day a year or something.
Yeah, right.
I think I told you, Jason, that my mom was disappointed when she found out that it wasn't Pedro Pascal, because she loved his walk.
Yeah,
and then his movements.
Well, tell her it's John Wayne's grandson, and maybe she'll.
Oh, okay.
Brendan Wayne or something.
Yeah, okay.
She might appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to cheat like I often do and just talk about some of the cool moments and things I especially liked. We've already talked about some of them, but so much to love in just a short episode. The feel and the vibe. Robert Rodriguez directed it. I don't think we've mentioned that yet. He directed El Mariachi, From Dusk Till Dawn, Sin City. Great director. And he
Spy Kids.
The
don't
hell
forget
out
Spy
of
Kids.
Spy Kids. Yeah, I didn't
know that. 1 through 20.
Right. And I think he's going to do one or two more. Also, Favreau is going to do one this season, and Dave Filoni.
He was actually in this episode, by the way.
Filoni?
No, Robert Rodriguez. He played the Transdodian, the Bosk character.
Trandoshian.
that
guy.
Oh, and quick little side note is that that was a Wookiee pelt, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Because Boba Fett had some Wookiee pelt on him. Had the Wookiee
strands. Yep.
I notice he's not wearing that anymore. Disney-fied. We talked about the music, which I feel like one way it differentiates itself from Mandalorian is it's a little more aggressive, which I think is kind of cool. I liked how we got his backstory because he's dreaming about it while in the back to tank. I thought that's clever. I liked after, you know, the whole Sarlacc pit, which we've talked through, was so cool. But then the next part after he climbs out and then it's night and he's still laying in the same spot and you see him from above and the sand crawler crawls up, you know, rolls up and the Jawa pulls off his helmet and then you see all the Jawas converge around him and just strip all his stuff off. It's just a great scene. Yeah. And that's where he says, you know, he picked up Fennec Shand cause she was left for dead like him. And I figured that could either mean left for dead in the Sarlacc pit or after he got out, you know, left for dead by the Jawas here because they just strip all his stuff and then leave him. And ambushed by this gang with these red energy shields, which it looks like the same kind of shield that divided Darth Maul and Qui-Gon Jinn.
Yeah.
And Phantom Menace.
Yep.
Badass fight with the energy sticks and everything.
Yep.
And then the freaking parkour with Fennec Shand chasing after them. So cool. And what a great scene with this Mos Espa, this Tatooine, all these like squat low buildings, the same color and everything. That was really cool. There's one more thing. What was it? Oh, the freaking monster.
Yeah, the little
I love the monster
type guy. Yeah, he was awesome.
Four-armed, muscular, roaring lizard thing, and I noticed it uses its middle arm sometimes for grabbing, but also for walking. And then it kind of looked like a centaur. It seemed mythological to me, and the way he choked it out, kind of like how Leia choked out. Jabba.
That's the one thing about half of those things that you mentioned. There's little nods to the old series, just like, you know, Mandalorian did. You know, the back to tank. You know, reminds us of Luke, you know, in Empire or Vader.
Rogue One.
But, you know, seeing the torture droid in his chamber and knowing that was the droid that was torturing that poor power droid with the burning his feet, you know, all those little things. Yeah.
I was not a huge fan of the big monster. It was kind of fun, but it felt like it looked a little bit like Swamp Thing to me, which isn't a bad thing, I guess, but I don't know. It reminded me, took me out of it a little bit. And then it seemed a bit too easy to kill. Like something that big and powerful, massive, get a chain around its neck. Yeah. Like, does a human have the strength to like pull hard enough to choke the thing out that quickly? I did notice that the chain had like sort of spikes on it.
Neck,
but
like you could say the same thing about Leia with Jabba, but she's in a bikini, so
so it works, right? Yeah.
So I never questioned that. No, for some reason.
Maybe he reminded me
Temuera Morrison would just strip down to his skivvies.
Yeah. Well, he almost was, but I don't know. It was fun and stuff like that, but something about and maybe the creature design didn't 100% work for me either, but it wasn't that bad. I just was sort of like, could have been a little smaller.
One of the listeners, said similar, but it's all subjective, you know.
Yeah.
Everyone has their opinions. For me, it was just like, oh my God, that's horrifying. I really liked it.
Sure, yeah.
It reminded me of Goro from Mortal Kombat. I don't know if you guys know that character. He was the end boss in the first, but he had the four arms.
Finish him.
So, yep.
Four arms, that'll do
Very
it.
Very similar, yep.
Let me ask you guys another question that you mentioned there, Jason. Why is Boba Fett sleeping in a back-to-tank all the time right now? Because
years later.
Right, so he's not still recovering from the Sarlacc.
He just likes it.
Maybe he just likes it, but it's a healing tank, right? It's a medical type thing. So does he need that all the time? I mean, he seemed to have a lot taken out of him after the fight with the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys in Mos Espa.
Yeah. And he said, like, get me back. Racing to get there, yeah.
Exactly. Get me back into the Bacta tank. But I'm just wondering, like, is he suffering? Like, is he in pain for some reason? Is he not as healthy as he should be?
I mean, I don't know for sure. And I don't know if that's like a mystery for the show to reveal, or if not, then my thought was it was just still about the Sarlacc, just the injuries he sustained by being there. Although he still had his clothes all intact. I mean, his face was burned, but his helmet was still on. But I guess even if you generate that much heat with his flamethrower, which he ignited in there, it could still burn him under the helmet. So I think it's either because of the Sarlacc pit or something the show hasn't revealed yet.
Okay. Long lasting effects of Sarlacc, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with that, but I also think it's being used to just give him a weakness, because if he didn't, you know, I mean, I think people might expect him to just, you know, lay waste to everyone that gets in front of him. So this
there should
gives
be a reason
him
for it, though.
An Achilles heel. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, hopefully they'll clarify that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Chris, last one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a quick one, I guess, but I think this, one of the things I really loved about it is that this world and this show feels lived in, and it feels very real and physical, even more than The Mandalorian and more than some other Star Wars things. You know, I mean, George Lucas tried to put more characters and more stuff into the movies when he made the special editions and so on. And, you know, a lot of people don't think that worked very well, but here it's all so seamless. I thought the establishing shot of the city of Mos Espa, from afar, you're sort of looking into that like crater where the city is with some buildings, but then there's also buildings up on the edge of it and around the rim. And you see like elevators that go up and down and stuff like that. I thought that all looked amazing. The bar or the club or whatever, where they go and meet Garsa Fwip, it felt like it was full of real people, and just it felt lived in. It felt really, really like it was a real place, more
well
so
realized,
than I thought.
Yeah,
and awesome. A lot of other stuff. The parkour scene with Fennec Shand, you know, they're running it again. It felt like a real place. And I noticed that there's lots of shots kind of looking down, and you could still see lots of people down on the streets, just going about their business, walking around, you know, meanwhile, they're jumping around up top and stuff like that.
Killing each other.
Yeah. And in like in the distance, it just, the city felt like it went on forever and just looked really good. So I think there were a lot of practical effects. I don't know if they're using that. What's that thing, that super high tech, like shooting filming room that they use on The Mandalorian for environments?
Yeah, I don't know what it's called, but I presume they're using it.
I guess they are, but yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's even better now because...
If people don't know, there's this round room, and they literally project the scene onto the walls using the Unreal game engine, and then they film it. Actually, I don't know if they project it or if it's emanated from like a screen that's on the wall or whatever, but there's cameras in there that film it so that you can have it be any time of day, outside, inside... And it looks amazing.
And the actors in there can actually see it, right? And they get a feel for where they are and stuff. Yeah. I don't know how much of that translates into the actual finished show, but no matter what, I thought it looked amazing. It just felt really good. And I loved it. So the whole environment of the show is really what I'm talking about. And they did just an amazing job.
And I think it's essential for us doing this podcast to appreciate stuff like that. Because you could easily just not think about it, you know? But it's awesome. It's amazing.
Yeah.
As a kid, I would have blown my load if I would have seen that.
As a kid, as an adult, whatever. Right.
That's what brings it to life. You know, we talked about the music and you know, George Lucas, you know, from the beginning has said that, you know, music is 50% of your experience. And, you know, you throw that in there with amazing visuals and these amazing characters. And it just. It's like layers upon layers. Yeah. Exactly.
Amazing music and amazing visuals. You could totally get away with crappy writing.
Right?
You could, but it's great writing too. I think you're, you know, really good. So.
In this case, yes.
Yeah, in this case, yeah. Yeah, it's good. All right, Eric.
Again, I think we've already talked about it, but seeing Boba Fett do his thing and even in his weakened state, you know, taking on those assassins and fighting the four-armed creature, just showing it how badass he is. I mean, I love the scene where, you know, they're running away and he blasts the dude to, you know, smithereens using some of his cool weapons. And I know that one of the things that I always loved about him was how he had all these really cool gadgets and, you know, ropes that could tie up Luke and flamethrowers and darts coming out of his knees. Just seeing him in action is just so Gadget. Cool. Exactly. But deadly.
But deadly and cool.
Right.
Not a bumbling fool.
Yeah. Go, gadget flamethrower. But yeah, seeing him use all that, you know, getting out of the Sarlacc with the flamethrower and using his missiles and just super cool. And I loved it.
Yeah. He never actually used his, jetpack in Star Wars, right? In Empire or Jedi.
Oh yeah, well, other than to fly off the barge and then into the barge.
I mean, we see him land on the barge with the jetpack, right?
Oh, we
so
do.
We see him come down, and then you're right, okay. It gets triggered and he flies off. Barely.
All right, my turn. I'm going to do my lore/callback/references. The title, Stranger in a Strange Land, is taken from a Bible verse, Exodus 2:22. It's Moses referring to himself. He was a Hebrew slave, sent down the river as a baby, found and raised by the Pharaoh until he found out he was a Hebrew and cast him out to live among his own people. So it's just about a person who is, you know, a stranger in a strange land. It's also a book by Robert Heinlein, who's about a character who's raised by Martians on Mars, but then goes to Earth to try to live among his own people. I never read that. A bunch of these we already talked about, so I won't go over them again. But the first dream that he has in the Bacta tank is Kamino, this water planet that we saw in Attack of the Clones, where the clone army was created and where he was born.
Yep.
Then we saw Battle of Geonosis with his father dying, then escaping the Sarlacc pit. And you can see the remains of Jabba's sail barge near the opening of the Sarlacc pit. And also one of its tentacles, one of the Sarlacc's tentacles, maybe the one shot off by Han Solo, who knows. Also, we don't see that beak that was added to the Sarlacc in a special edition. I don't know if that's a retcon or maybe it was just retracted, you know, it goes down into the pit when he's not eating.
It'll be who knows.
Let's see, the Sand People's lizard dog used as guard beast by Tusken Raiders. Also, we've seen them used by clone troopers in the Clone Wars series. One tracked Ahsoka Tano on Coruscant after she escaped from the Republic military base. We also saw them last season on The Mandalorian when he's with Cobb Vanth, Timothy Oliphant's character, I think, looking for Sand People, and they come and Timothy Oliphant gets nervous, but Mando's really calm and ends up petting one of them or something. Let's see, the Tusken Raider captive, the other one, the snitch, is a Rodian like Greedo from Star Wars, and Fett tells him, "We can get to Anchorhead, I can get us off world." I think the only time we've ever heard of Anchorhead is when Luke in the original Star Wars tells Ben Kenobi, "I can take you as far as Anchorhead. You can get transport there to Mos Eisley or wherever you're going." The Rodian, when he's like, when Boba Fett's like, "Come on, you blew it, blah, blah, blah." The Rodian's like, "Blah, blah, blah, Sleemo," which you heard young Anakin call Sebulba in Phantom Menace. By the way, after we did The Mandalorian last year, I said I was going to watch The Clone Wars, and I did. I went back and didn't go back for the first time. Watched every single episode of The Clone Wars, also Rebels, and Resistance, which was awful, and then Bad Batch. But because I watched it right after we covered Mandalorian, I've pretty much forgotten everything in it.
Great. So now you'll have to go back and rewatch it.
Damn it. Let's see. Fennec Shand, just as a quick refresher, that's his partner. She's a skilled bounty hunter and mercenary. We already talked about how he found her last season. She's also in the Bad Batch shows, yep, which takes place right after the Empire takes power, and it's like her first days as a assassin and mercenary and everything like that. And I've met Ming-Na Wen at a couple of fan fest conventions when I was doing panel moderating. Super nice, very warm person. Lovely, lovely person. I can't say that about all the actors I met, but she was.
I was browsing through the Book of Boba Fett subreddit, and someone was mentioning that she is 58 years old, and I do not believe that.
Holy
cow. I
cannot
believe that.
That's insane. Because when she start, when the character starts as an assassin, that's like 30, 35 years before we see her now. And I'm like, I don't know if that's realistic, but now you say she's 58. So I'm like, yeah, that kind of fits, I guess. The two Gamorrean guards, do you think those were the same guards we saw in Return of the Jedi in Jabba's palace?
Or did they had killed? To be, right?
They were. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You mentioned the droid that tortured other droids. We saw him. That guy, the droid, at least in this episode, he was voiced by Matt Berry, who plays Laszlo in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, I love that show.
It's cool. Yeah, that's such a good show. That is awesome. You mentioned this Trandoshan lizard-looking dude who pays tribute to Fett by giving him a Wookiee pelt. That's the same species as Bosk, one of the bounty hunters that Vader hired along with Fett to capture Han Solo. No disintegrations. The club where Boba Fett goes, I don't know if Jabba's palace is, it's outside of Mos Espa, right? But anyway, the city is Mos Espa, which is not Mos Eisley where the cantina is from Star Wars,
right?
But Mos Espa from Phantom Menace, where we saw with Anakin do his pod race.
Pod racing, yeah.
Yeah. Max Rebo. We didn't talk about Max Rebo.
Oh, yeah.
His big blue elephant piano player from Return of the Jedi.
Weird looking, yeah.
I loved seeing them again. I thought that was so great. And the song, guys, the song they were playing was a variation of the famous cantina theme that they played originally. Yeah, just in a different style.
Here it is. I got it right here.
I guess it's their one hit and they just mix it up.
And by the way, on Wikipedia, it says, I'm not making this up, he's called a jizz whaler because he plays jizz songs, which is a type of music in Star Wars. Not making that up.
If you say so.
I like that he had a droid drummer. And And then the last thing here is in Boba Fett's helmet, you know, the club owner woman whose name I've forgotten gives him a bunch of money. It's all Republic credits,
right?
Which is fairly new since they've only been in power for a few years and will soon be destroyed by Kylo Ren.
Right.
Well, in 20 years or whatever it is. Sure. So, any like random notes or anything, Chris?
Yeah, I got a few
to talk about.
I got a few, some we've mentioned, but I thought it was fun when Boba Fett's sitting there and he mentions to Fennec that we really need a protocol droid. Bit of a callback there.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, of course.
Well, it was funny how they introduced it. The guy there paying tribute was speaking in some alien language.
Yeah.
Boba Fett's like, did you get that? Or did you get any of that? Something about, what was it?
Something about friendship.
Something about friendship. We really need a protocol droid.
Yeah, exactly. I thought, you know, it's funny. I thought the little loincloths that the Gamorreans were wearing were a little bit revealing. I'm pretty sure I saw some Gamorrean butt cheek at one point. So maybe we'll get some more of that. I don't know. And this is kind of not an in-show thing, but I'm pretty sure we saw some of those Boston Dynamics dog droids in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Just with custom shells on them in Mos Espa there. which I thought was kind of cool. And they've been on TV and in shows before as well. Oh, and then one more thing is when they were watching those raiders or bandits or whatever they were attack the moisture farmer, they painted that symbol on the wall, right? Some sort of, I don't know, gang symbol. I have no idea, but I'm curious to find out more about that. And it occurred to me, though, that it kind of looks like an upside down Mandalorian helmet in a way. Don't know if that has any meaning or not, but occurred to me.
And by the way, we really didn't mention it, but we don't even know who the guys with the red energy shields are.
No.
But Fennec Shand has one of them now. So I think we'll find out next week. But it just seems like Jabba's dead. There's a power vacuum. So people are messing around with a new guy and he has to prove himself. And all the other criminals are going to be vying to knock him from his perch before he can establish himself or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess.
But that was it, really, just in terms of other notes. That's all I got.
Anything else, Eric, we didn't get to?
You guys touched on most everything. I mean, there's definitely some stuff that I'm looking forward to. I hope to see the trap door used in Jabba's palace. I hope to see some you know, other creatures. I mean, she says menagerie and didn't just specifically say rancor. So I'm hoping that he has a zoo under there and maybe we'll get to see somebody getting ripped apart or something. I thought that was something that could be cool.
I kind of expected to see that trap door open already in this episode.
At least once. Right.
As soon as I saw it, I'm like, visiting. Oh, well, they're standing right on it. I mean,
somebody's going down.
Yeah, it's got to be used before the end of this. Come on.
Yeah. I'm glad they did it, though, but like save it, you know, and then it'll be really exciting at some point.
It might just be a throwaway gag at some point, but that would be fine, too.
It would be.
Yeah, good. It has to be for sure. And this is nothing of nothing, but I noticed that the Jawas, they are like a little sadistic, and you know, they go to take off, you know, Mando's armor and they knock him with their gun and then they laugh.
They're mean.
And then you see them like stealing all the coin and you think that they are a little innocent, you know, junk like thieves, gremlins. But yet at the same time, they got a little evil side.
I was so glad that we got more about the sand people and insight into them. I don't think there's anything more to the Jawas. They're little
scavengers. Yeah. If they would totally be on eBay.
Yep.
Okay. I only have a few things that we didn't talk about. Why do you think it's called The Book of Boba Fett?
It's a really good question. I don't know. Do you have an answer?
I mean, it could just be a cool way to talk about his story. Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe like a bookie or a bookmaker. I don't know. Or I think book can mean like the sum of criminal charges, like throw the book at him. But
I was thinking that it was maybe just one story. You know, that it was just a book and it was just going to be, I mean, as far as I know, this is just going to be a one shot thing, right? And then they're going to jump into Mando.
I mean,
maybe
that's, I think the idea, but they can always do more if they want to.
Right.
There was talk of a Boba Fett movie and an Obi-Wan Kenobi movie a while back, but I think the series, cause the Obi-Wan series, I think finished filming, is going to be out next year, are taking the place of that, right? It feels like it. And they're so short. It's only 7 episodes. If they're all like around 40 minutes, it's almost like kind of a long movie anyway.
Yeah.
It's cool. And they're movie quality as far as I'm concerned. And then the last thing is, you know, they show all the iconic helmets and droids and things at the beginning of these series, and they added Fennec Shand's in there. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, oh, I didn't notice that, but that is cool.
I didn't. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, that was super cool. Let's take a little break. There is more to come. News, listener feedback. Stay with us.
I really did dig my
welcome back, everybody. It's time to do a little bit of news about the Book of Boba Fett. And I think most of the news this week, guys, is kind of just reviews of the first episode and things like that. But there are a few things here. The first one being that there was supposed to be a red carpet premiere event for this show, but unfortunately it had to be canceled due to the effects of this Omicron COVID variant that's racking up record infections all over the place.
Yeah.
So they postponed it. They've moved the premiere event for the Book of Boba Fett to the 4th, or sorry, it was supposed to be on the 4th of January. They've moved it to the 8th of February, 2022. And I think they are going to use it to celebrate the end of the series rather than the start, which is a little weird, but it's a thing that's happening. And so in February,
I wouldn't be surprised if they cancel that too.
At this rate, hopefully. I wouldn't be surprised. But if it goes ahead, there should be lots of good photos and actors and photography and stuff like that, if indeed they can do it in person. I don't know. But if it is happening, it will be at the El Capitan Theater in Hollywood.
Did you get a sense of how well it's being reviewed or not?
I think it's, I didn't read too many of the actual reviews yet, but I think it's a little middle of the road. Like, people liked it, but they feel like it's maybe a little too nostalgic sort of thing. Like, it's kind of, it's kind
of fanservice-y kind of
fanservice-y. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we going back to the Sarlacc pit and stuff like that, which is stuff we all seem to love, but not everyone did. So, that's just the one episode though, you know, lots can change over the course of the season. Okay, so Jennifer Beals, who plays the owner of that club, Garza Fwip is her name. It's a name I'm going to have to try to remember. It's a hard one. She did an interview, though, in Variety, and it's a bit of a weird, confusing interview, which I'll get into in a second. But she reveals in there that the last movie she saw before COVID lockdown was The Rise of Skywalker. And she says this in the interview: "That was the last film I saw in a theater before I was cast. As it happened, I didn't know about The Mandalorian really either. My older brother called me and said, 'I'm going to go watch The Mandalorian with my kids.' And I said, 'Oh, tell me about The Mandalorian.' And he started telling me about how the show, and how great it was. And then I walked into my house and the phone rang, and that was the offer. So that night I started watching. I was just gobsmacked. It was so beautiful and so cinematic and heart-centered at the same time." So she was a bit of a Star Wars fan growing up, she said, but kind of lost touch with it, went to see Rise of Skywalker, and then all of a sudden she was offered this role in the Star Wars universe, which is kind of cool.
Did she say what she thought of Rise of Skywalker?
No, she did not.
Just curious.
But who knows, Jason, you'll have to have her on and argue with her about it someday. Maybe.
They're like, "What did you think of Rise of Skywalker?" And she's like, "The Mandalorian was so good."
That says it all, I guess. They asked her, you know, what she knew about the character. And she said, "Are you kidding me? I mean, I knew about the character, but this is how good they are at the lockdown of secrets. Even when I first stepped onto the set, I didn't realize I was in the Book of Boba Fett. I just knew that I was going to be part of this story." Now, I'm going to come back to that in a second, but I thought that was a really confusing answer at the time. Like, how can you be cast on something and not know what you're doing? Before we move on to that, though, they also asked her about the process of putting on the head appendages that her character has.
She's a Twi'lek or whatever.
Yeah, they're called Leku, which I didn't know before. And they asked how heavy they were. And she says, "The team really went to the ends of the earth to make sure that not only they were incredibly light, but they were balanced perfectly for my skull. They were easy to keep on during the day. We could take them off during a break if I needed one, but wearing them just changes everything. It's like this incredible crown of sensitivity and identity." So, I don't know. She seemed to really
Two big tentacles.
Have a good time.
I mean, I know as an actor, you can put something like that on and it just helps you transform the way you feel, like you're someone else, you know?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I thought, I mean, like I said earlier, I can't wait to see more of her and what she does in this show. I thought she looked great and was an intriguing character. So cool stuff. Now, Hollywood Reporter did an article on the Book of Boba Fett, and apparently this is one of the most secretive projects that they have ever done. According to this article, as we all know, the Book of Boba Fett was announced in that post-credit scene at the end of season 2 of The Mandalorian, and apparently almost nobody outside of the key people involved with the show and the top executives at Disney were in the loop on this, because if you recall, a week before that, they had done this huge Star Wars event where they announced all these shows and movies and all kinds of upcoming Star Wars stuff, but no real details on this. And then they dropped this after the season finale of The Mandalorian, and really nobody was involved. Apparently, most of the people at Lucasfilm and Disney Plus and all that didn't really know what was going on with this. Wow. Because they wanted to keep it such a secret. And then Robert Rodriguez, who, of course, was the director of this and is co-show running it with Jon Favreau, he said, I usually avoid premier properties. You'll never be able to please everybody. It's a losing game. I'd rather go do something I've created so nobody can say, hey, that's wrong because whatever, whatever. I created it so it can be anything I want it to be. I love that freedom. But that changed with Boba Fett because he was a character that was always underserved. It was a character way more popular than he should have been based on his limited screen time. So it's almost like starting with an original character. You can kind of do anything you want so long as you make him cool and don't make him a buffoon. But that was a pretty cool reason for him getting involved.
Because I feel like at the same time that he's deciding not to rule by fear, but by respect, it's kind of like saying, I'm just going to be a cool MF-er, so cool that everyone will respect me, which is perfect for this character who's known for just being one of the coolest Star Wars characters.
Perfect. Absolutely.
I saw a thing with Robert Rodriguez and in The Mandalorian, and he was designing some of the fight scenes and whatnot, that he used his kids and he used action figures that he had, and he actually used a helmet, a Boba Fett helmet that he dressed up as a kid to kind of reenact some of these action sequences with his kids. And they all just loved it.
Yeah. In fact, it's mentioned in this article that he was doing that for this show too. Like, they'd take action figures in the backyard and just film them, and they'd try scenes and things like that. Awesome. And then he'd actually bring that in on actual production days and be like, guys, look what I did. I tried this out and I thought this worked really well. Can you guys like do it? This, you know? I don't know. Awesome. That feels like a funny way to do things, but he's the kind of guy that would try that, I think. Anyways, circling back to my confusion with the Jennifer Beals interview, Ming-Na Wen said this about reprising her role for this show. She said, they're so secretive that when dealing with the contracts, there isn't even a title for the show. It's all under pseudonym. I naturally assumed I was being brought back to do more Mandalorian season 3 until I showed up on set. And then she found out she's shooting the Book of Boba Fett. Like, so.
Surprise, it's a porn.
Yeah.
You signed the contract.
Already signed. But I guess that's what they did with Jennifer Beals, too. It's like, you're going to play this character on The Mandalorian, but oh no, it's the Book of Boba Fett. So here you go. It's a whole different show. But I just thought how secretive it was really cool. And you know, I guess not that unusual for certain shows. And I guess Star Wars has a lot of eyes on it, so they need to do that. But cool stuff. And that's all for the news.
Awesome.
Quick.
Great stuff. Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's get in some listener responses. We'll go in the same order. So, Chris.
Alrighty. The first one is from Jamie Dimmick. What a great first episode. I love how they covered telling the backstory without making it feel forced. I liked finding out more about what crime lords actually do in this world. And I thought it was really cool when Boba pulled a Leia on the creature at the end.
Yeah, for sure. The next one is by Ben Woods. Excellent start to a series. Has the original trilogy feel and leaves me wanting more. I love the flashbacks, and the monster at the end was really cool.
Everybody's loving the monster at the end here.
Yeah. Oh.
Just wait. Jerry Gomez says, great start. Ooey gooey and so sandy. Loved the Jawas. They were just taking everything. The sandy part, like when the Tusken Raiders first got Boba Fett, there was like a sandstorm, but it was also really bright. It was just a beautiful moment, a beautiful sequence there.
The sand, it just gets everywhere, though.
Yeah.
It does. It does.
So annoying.
So annoying. All right. Brian White says, I liked the flashback storytelling. I hope that's how the rest of the episodes go. What was that creature at the end? At first, I thought it was a Rancor. Mos Espo sure has changed since episode one. I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not, I don't think it's been seen before in Star Wars, so we don't know what it was.
I tried to look it up and I couldn't find the information. Yeah. I don't think it even has creature. A name yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was like Sand Monster or something like that. Yeah. The next one by Paik Allen. It was absolutely unreal to be watching the scene of how Fett escaped the Sarlacc all these years later. I'm very intrigued by his story, the respectable crime lord. I feel like it's going to be a side of Boba Fett we never expected watching the older movies, focusing on relationships and mutual respect. He saved that Tusken kid, and now he has some unique allies in the Raiders. Can't wait to see where this goes.
Jenny Lundgren says, good start. I really liked it and look forward to the pod. The music at the end made it apparent that it was Ludwig Göransson because it sounded just like a score from the Swedish film Ronja Rövardotter by Astrid Lindgren. I'm sure I butchered that, sorry. And that was funny for me as a Swede.
Well, maybe we should, after this is all done, watch that film and review it. Why not? All right, Emily Rouse writes, disappointed. How exactly do you get burned under armor while your clothes remain intact? Half the time, Boba was absurdly invincible fighting off lizard monsters and sand dogs, even though he's been out in the elements with no sustenance. And the other half, he's so weak he needs to be in an iron lung. And who sends two captives out with only a child and a dog? So.
All right. It sucked.
Yeah, that's it. Forget it. Not watching
that's,
anymore.
That's our show. Thanks, yeah. Everybody.
See, the next one by Rita Cantanella Orell. I was very excited to see how he escapes the Sarlacc and lost his armor, etc., but was wondering if they went to a Godzilla discount shop for that last monster.
There you go.
Nice Godzilla discount shop. Is that a real place? Because I do kind of want to go there.
Yeah, I need a monster.
Yeah.
Shay White says, we all loved it. Once again, the episode should be longer. The escape from the Sarlacc was a great scene. Does Mandalorian armor not come with an environmental seal? Want to see more with his relationship with the Tusken Raiders? What kind of lingering health issues does he have that he needs constant back to treatments for?
It's a good question. I want to know that too.
Yep.
All right, Dave Mason. Filoni and Favreau have done it again. A great mix of nostalgia with new original content and expansion of the Star Wars universe, or at least fleshing out the current universe. Love the first episode. Love how they solved the Sarlacc problem and tied it all up in a nice Tatooinean bow with sand people, raiders, and Jawas to boot. Can't wait to see where they take all the teasers they put in the episode. Like the standoff with the mayor. Were those his goons who attacked our antiheroes?
Ooh, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or is that a rival syndicate? What is the JL symbol written on the farmhouse that gets roughed up? Are the sand people going to help? Why did the youngling go to the effort to show Boba all of this? I also really hope we get more backstory on stuff with Jango and Geonosis, but there might not be much there as it was a pretty short time. But seeing Boba grow up without Jango would be cool. Regardless, it was a very good episode and the practical effects and CGI were outstanding. I don't know how much I can even tell the difference anymore. It's just that good. Can't wait to hear your episode about it and the future Book of Boba Fett episodes. Keep up the great work.
That was a great message, Dave. Gave me a few things to think about, and those were all good questions that I hope we get the answers to.
Absolutely. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Please write in again, all you guys. And we have a couple calls. Here's Steve Brown.
All right, House Podcastica. This is Steve, and this is Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 1.
Wait, so Steve's known for what we call live Steving. So he's going to give us a quick summary as he watches.
Oh, okay, cool.
Oh, dang, is this him in the Sarlacc, inside the Sarlacc's stomach? We're going to see how he got out? Yeah. Oh, so did he burn his way through the skin, and then he just... Whoa. just climbed his way out and like digging out of a grave. Dang, first the Ewoks steal all his stuff. Now the what are they called? These guys with the tusks and the raiders, the Tusken Raiders, is that them? Yeah. Now they're carrying him off to something. It's called Stranger in a Strange Land. We really need a protocol droid. Was it basically like a protection racket? He's the crime lord, but he makes sure nobody gets... Yeah, that's what it looks like. I was wondering where those green guys had gotten off to. They were just waiting to make their charge. I guess she only needs one alive. You remember Tremors? That's what this dog-like creature reminds me of, the from Tremors. Crap, I knew that looked bad. There's some sort of arm in the sand. Oh, see it jump on his back? Yeah. Now he's strangling this creature with the ankle chain. So is the kid telling him that he killed it or that Boba killed it? Ace. Directed by Robert Rodriguez, written by Jon Favreau. Nice. All right. Can't wait to hear you guys talk about it.
Live Steving. I love great. That. That's amazing.
Yeah.
He catches some good points that we usually talked about during the podcast. And here we have our good friend Anwen from New Zealand.
Hey, guys. It's Anwen, and I am so excited to have watched the first episode of The Book of Boba Fett. We had to watch it in the daytime because it had just dropped, and we couldn't wait till the nighttime. So some of the night scenes were a little hard to see in the bright summer daylight of New Zealand, but it was amazing. Absolutely loved it. One of my favourite moments was the Sarlacc pit. I mean, how incredible to actually see how Boba Fett got out of there. It was amazing, and seeing Jabba's barge there on the side of the pit, and it's just so incredible after so many years to see how that actually happened. And I loved that creature that was buried in the sand. It was so freaky, standing up with four arms or kind of walking like a centaur. It was such a great design, and I loved it. Everything about it was awesome. I think it was kind of a slow-ish start, I guess, just to sort of set up what we're going to see. But absolutely loved it, and I can't wait to hear what you guys thought about it. Bye!
Yeah, I think, yes. I just quickly looked at some of the reviews, and it seems like some people thought it was slow. And, man, it didn't even occur to me. I wonder if people who... weren't around for the original Star Wars maybe don't care as much, you know, and more for us who are big fans. I mean, you watch Star Wars, that's slow. Like, to me, it feels kind of slow now, the original Star Wars.
I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I didn't find this show slow at all, though. Like, I was riveted by almost all of it. Like, I could have watched him sit there in the throne room and have the people come in and pay tribute just the whole time. Like, I really
just
enjoy
the little
it.
Interactions with him and Chan, or him and that Rodian were funny as hell.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think all that was great
full
stuff.
Full on action all the time.
No, definitely not. I don't think it was slow at all.
And the Sarlacc pit, you know, I do think there's probably, you know, something to the, you know, people who were around.
Yeah,
but that has been more. A question that has been, you know, discussed and thought about for years and years.
For any Star Wars fan, you would think would be
exactly
curious.
To come back to that. I don't see how you can say why would you go back to that, because that's an unanswered question.
Yeah, and you know,
Boba Fett, come on.
All right,
speaking of
come
that
on. Come on.
Something we never mentioned with and I didn't bring up, maybe I should have during the news, but there's a video out there of Patton Oswalt. Have you guys seen this? It's a video of him speaking to what looks like a room of people, maybe a classroom or something like that. And he is describing how Boba Fett escaped the Sarlacc. And what he describes, and this was, I don't know when it was shot, but it was shot sometime in the past. What he describes is exactly what was depicted in this episode. Boba Fett's in there. Wow. He comes out. You see the hand come out of the sand first and come down. It's weird that it is so exact. I can only think that the, you know, the people who made this show were aware of that and decided to go with that for some reason, but it's strange.
It's interesting.
But check it out if you can find it, yeah.
I was sort of, it just dawned on me, because I was like, why didn't he crawl out the hole, but there's teeth facing inward, right?
Yeah. Right, right.
So that's why I think that's one reason why he might not want to crawl right out the hole there.
It does seem like it might be difficult to
or the beak,
through,
right?
Yeah, the beak. Yeah. Crawl through the sand and come up somewhere else, but maybe a flamethrower helps.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. Yeah, I think if he didn't have that flamethrower, he would have been toast. Well, he already kind of was, but, you know, dead.
Yep.
All right, that is our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you guys for coming on. I had fun.
Absolutely.
If you guys listening want to write in or record a message and send it to us, you can send that to talk@podcastica.com.
You can also check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
And we're also on Twitter and Instagram @podcastica.
And, of course, please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com and check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. And what are you guys doing right now while Walking Dead is on break?
Well, we did, you know, finish up covering World Beyond and Fear. So we're going to come back to do Fear when it returns in the new year. But, of course, the main show, Walking Dead, comes back in February, which we will be doing. Our last episode was a little bit of a Christmas one that I dropped on Christmas Day. We reviewed a movie from this year, a British movie called Silent Night, which was kind of a Christmas movie, but a fun watch. And coming up in January, we are going to do like a little mini kind of spotlight on Pollyanna McIntosh, because we were rather impressed with some work she has done recently in the Walking Dead universe, and so
you
we're
can
gonna
say
watch
it.
Okay, World Beyond. She was on World Beyond.
She
was
great.
As I was talking, I'm like, do I reveal that? No, I don't
it's
know.
Cool.
So, so we thought she was great. So we're gonna watch a couple of her movies, The Woman and a sequel to The Woman that she directed. So we're gonna talk about those on an episode in January, and then who knows? We'll see what's after that until Walking Dead comes back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Karen came on because, you know, she left. She stopped watching Walking Dead a while back. But now that we're on break, she came back and we talked about Krampus, the Christmas horror movie, which I'd never seen before. It was pretty good.
Yeah, it's cool. I was considering doing that one because last year we did one called A Christmas Horror Story that had William Shatner. And so I was thinking about what to do this year, and we landed on Silent Night, but maybe Krampus next time. I don't know.
And what, I mean, Podcastica as a network is super busy right now. On Strange Indeed, we finished up with Lock and Key recently, and Rima and Pank are also covering Dexter on there, the Dexter New Blood new series. On Walking Dead Cast, Karen and I did Krampus, and there's going to be a Women of Podcastica episode coming up here with several of the women hosts from the network. And on House Podcastica, this podcast, maybe you already know since you're subscribed, but who's listening, but and if you're not subscribed, please subscribe. But they're about to finish up Wheel of Time, Greg and Ben and Wendy, that they still have to do the finale that's coming out soon. And we fell in love with Yellow Jacket on Showtime. It's this great show. If you're not watching that, I highly recommend checking out. It's really dark. And it's much darker than Boba Fett, so maybe, you know, if you're not into dark stuff. But it's also got some black humor in there. It's kind of like Lord of the Flies mixed with Lost, with a little Mean Girls thrown in. This soccer team gets in a plane accident, and they end up turning cannibal.
I can't wait to watch that.
Crazy.
Show looks amazing.
It's really well written. It's really fresh. It's and we've had a lot of time covering a lot of mysteries and secrets to speculate about and stuff too. And then, of course, on this podcast, I'm thrilled to be covering Boba Fett right now, and Cobra Kai comes out in just a couple of days. So we're going to be covering that too, of course, and that'll be me and Richard and Rima, like always.
Awesome.
Lots of stuff. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
And I'm glad you could join us for this, Eric. I love you.
I know.